This is Chapter 2 of the highlights of the North York General Emergency Medicine Update Conference from Toronto, May 2014, which brings you a world leader in EM education. My new friend and the nicest, most approachable, and humblest guy I think I've ever met, Dr. Amal Mattu. Dr. Mattu is a professor, vice chair, and director of the Emergency Cardiology Fellowship in the Department of EM at the University of Maryland School of Medicine. In this presentation, he'll talk about three very important and relatively simple new cardiology topics that will change your EM practice. Left bundle branch block in acute MI, what the ECG criteria are and what they should be for STEMI, and the importance of serial ECG testing. We'll have lots of key images to look at on the EM Cases blog post and on your Agile MD app that I hope you've downloaded from the website already. Now, usually I put in a few intermittent summary statements during the podcast, but Dr. Mattu does such a great job summarizing his own material that I'm going to leave it to the master. So here we go with Dr. Amal Mattu.
Thank you all very much, and once again, thanks to the folks from North York General for inviting me back. So hopefully we'll have a little fun as we go through this talk on emergency cardiology. I'm going to try to focus on just a handful of articles from the recent medical literature. We'll talk a little bit about some new STEMI guidelines and a potpourri of EKG-related topics. These are not necessarily the most amazing research articles out there, but we're going to talk about some of the key take-home points from these articles, and this is a very biased lecture because I've chosen articles that I think are really useful, and so no surprise, there's a bunch of EKG topics in there. We're going to go through this in a case-based approach, and all of these are actual real cases. Okay, you've got a 58-year-old man who comes into the emergency department complaining of chest pain, nausea, and shortness of breath. He's got a concerning story. Vitals are pretty good. He looks uncomfortable, and you get the 12-lead EKG. And what does it show? A left bundle. Now, you go to the computer, and the most recent EKG that you see is from 4 months ago, and he had completely normal EKG, no left bundle. So this is a presumed new left bundle, right? And we've all been taught what we need to do with the chest pain plus a presumed new left bundle. We've all been taught that this is a STEMI equivalent. For decades, we've been taught if somebody has chest pain and a new left bundle or presumed new left bundle, treat it like a STEMI. Give them thrombolytics or send them to the cath lab, right? Well, maybe not. Let's take a step back and talk about which patients need emergent reperfusion therapy. In other words, cath lab activation or lytics. And let me ask also, how many people here, if you see a STEMI during your next shift, you give lytics? How many people? So a lot of people here, okay? So again, when I use the term acute reperfusion therapy, we're talking about either cath lab or lytics, either one still within standard of care. So who qualifies for acute reperfusion therapy? Well, again, we mentioned this already. In the 2013 STEMI guidelines, they came up with some new recommendations, and if a STEMI patient goes into cardiac arrest and you get them back, or a cardiac arrest patient, you get them back, and they have evidence of STEMI on 12-lead EKG, the guidelines now say that patient needs to go for cath, and some suggestions even get lytics if you don't have cath. So post-arrest STEMI is listed now as one of the criteria for cath lab activation or acute reperfusion. All right, that's in the ACCHA guidelines, class one. All right, so that is something that needs to be done. Or what we're most accustomed to, if somebody comes in with concerning symptoms, and for the residents out there, notice that I didn't say chest pain, I just said concerning symptoms. So not everybody needs to have chest pain. If you have an elderly patient, for example, with shortness of breath and diaphoresis, that's just as good as chest pain. You don't have to have chest pain. You have to have concerning symptoms plus a specific EKG. What are the specific EKG findings that we've been taught justify lytics or cath? Well, if they have ST elevation of at least a millimeter in two contiguous leads, that's a no-brainer. We all know that. If you have evidence of a posterior STEMI, all right? So ST depression, V1, V2, V3, maybe you do some posterior leads, you see ST elevation. So posterior STEMI, those patients qualify as well. New left bundle, we're going to come back to that. And also, left bundle branch block with Scarbosa criteria or pacemakers with Scarbosa criteria. I put those in brackets because those aren't formally in all the guidelines, but there's a lot of good literature definitely for the left bundle and Scarbosa, which we'll talk about in a second, and also some increasing literature talking about pacemakers plus Scarbosa criteria. All right, so this is what the guidelines have traditionally said. ST elevation, two contiguous leads, or posterior STEMI, or new or presumed new left bundle. And a lot of the guidelines will also say if a patient has a left bundle or pacer with Scarbosa criteria, those patients need to go to the cath lab or you give them lytics right now.
So what Dr. Mattu has just described are the old STEMI guidelines, but you can pretty much forget about those because the newest 2013 guidelines change the playing field. The best reference for what Dr. Mattu is about to explain, which will be on the EM Cases blog post and written summary, is a paper from Kai and Mehta out of the American Heart Journal called The Left Bundle Branch Block Puzzle in the 2013 ST Elevation Myocardial Infarction Guideline, from falsely declaring emergency to denying reperfusion in a high-risk population. Now really, reperfusion therapy is only indicated in the patient with left bundle branch block and concerning symptoms for an MI if 1, they're hemodynamically unstable, 2, they're in acute CHF, 3, they're displaying Scarbosa criteria A or B, and 4, they're displaying the newest modification of the Scarbosa criteria involving the ST to S ratio, all of which Dr. Mattu are about to explain.
Now, I'm going to put this question marks next to the left bundle because in recent years, people have actually been studying this concept of new left bundle. This idea that for the past few decades, we've all been taught if somebody's got a new left bundle, that must be an MI. It must be a transmural MI. Give them lytics or activate your cath lab. 1 o'clock in the morning, doesn't matter. Call the whole team in, activate your cath lab. But recent studies, relatively large studies, have actually shown that a new left bundle does not confer an increased risk for an MI. What these studies, these are some sample studies from recent years, but essentially what they said was that if you have a group of patients with chest pain and new left bundle compared to patients with chest pain and known old left bundle compared to patients with chest pain and no bundle, all three groups have the same rate of ruling in. In other words, the new left bundle means nothing in terms of the chance that that person in front of you is going to rule in. And so, based on studies like this, people have put out some fantastic review articles and put all the literature together. And this is a very, very nice review article from Journal of American College of Cardiology in 2012. And what they said was that this is how we should be practicing. If a person comes in with concerning symptoms and a left bundle, who cares if it's new or old? You can't assume that a new left bundle confers an increased risk, right? The traditional teaching that we've been taught that new left bundle equals MI is based on horrendous data. And so what they say is that if a person's got a left bundle, you don't even need to worry if it's new or old. But a left bundle patient qualifies for lytics if they're hemodynamically unstable or in acute heart failure, or if the patient has concordant ST segment changes, Scarbosa, what I call Scarbosa A or B. And they said nothing about new or old. You don't have to worry about new or old.
Dr. Mattu is now going to go through the decision algorithm. When you're presented with a patient with a left bundle branch block and you're thinking about STEMI, which we'll have in the written summary.
First question, is the patient hemodynamically unstable or in acute heart failure? If yes, you're done. If they're not unstable or in acute heart failure, go to the next step. Do they have Scarbosa concordance criteria? If yes, you're done. Call it a STEMI equivalent, give them lytics, or activate the cath lab. If they're not unstable and don't have Scarbosa, then you just do a routine rule out the way you do with anyone else with chest pain. It makes it very, very easy, all right? Now, this is what Scarbosa concordance criteria are. Essentially, what they say is that if you have a left bundle and you have ST elevation in the same direction as a QRS, or in V1, V2, V3, you have ST depression in the same direction as a QRS, that's what concordance means. And by the way, to meet Scarbosa criteria, you don't need two contiguous leads. You only need one lead. Only one lead and you're done, lytics or cath. The key point here is that you don't need to worry about new or old left bundle. You activate your cath lab or give lytics if they're unstable or they've got Scarbosa criteria A or B, right? Well, you know what? The national guidelines have caught up with that, and in 2013, the national ACC-AHA guidelines came out, and they also said, moving forward, new or presumed new left bundle by itself is no longer a criteria for cath or lytics. It is no longer a STEMI criteria. So we can now get rid of it from the board review courses, get rid of it from the board review books, get rid of it from the textbooks. The guidelines now no longer list new or presumed new left bundle as an automatic cath lab activation or dose of lytics. And this is an article that was published after the guidelines came out, essentially validating what Nealon said in that 2012 article. A left bundle should be considered a STEMI equivalent only if the patient's hemodynamically unstable or in acute heart failure or has either of the Scarbosa criteria. And they also proposed a third criteria, which we'll talk about in just a second, essentially if the ST is deviated more than 25% in the other direction of the R or S wave. So what Scarbosa said is that if you ever have a QRS that mainly points up and the ST segment's elevated a millimeter in the same direction, that's bad, that's a STEMI, activate your cath lab or give lytics. Scarbosa also said in V1, V2, V3, and for whatever reason, she only focused on those three leads, but she said in V1, V2, V3, QRS points down, so we would expect the ST elevated. But if the QRS points down and the ST is deviated in the same direction of a millimeter, that's bad, that's an MI, activate your cath lab or give lytics. Those are the two Scarbosa criteria that we're concerned about. Now, there's also been a proposal for a third criteria. This hasn't been validated yet, so I don't think that it's something that you need to use immediately right away. So if you forget this, that's okay. But for those people that are comfortable with Scarbosa, I'm going to take you a step further and talk about this new proposal for a third criteria. Essentially, what they say is that if the QRS goes in a certain direction and the ST segment is in the opposite direction, more than 25% of the size of the R wave, that's positive. Or if you've got a giant S wave and the ST is deviated in the opposite direction more than 25%, that meets criteria also.
So just a quick review there. If you have ST deviation in a discordant direction that's more than 25% the size of the Q wave or the S wave, in a patient who presents with symptoms consistent with an MI with left bundle branch block, then consider activating your cath lab or giving lytics.
So, take-home points. First of all, new left bundle, in the absence of instability, in the absence of acute heart failure, and in the absence of Scarbosa criteria, new left bundle, don't worry about it. Just treat them like a normal chest pain patient, right? You don't need to go searching for the most recent EKG. Right? And also, we'll have to see what the literature says about this proposed third rule, but make sure you know the Scarbosa rules A and B that we've talked about. Because if you don't know them, you're going to miss some of those patients that are having a STEMI equivalent. You've got a patient with suspected MI and there's a left bundle. Who cares if it's new or old? First question, are they unstable or in acute heart failure? If yes, you're done. Activate your cath lab or give lytics. If they're not unstable or in acute heart failure, go to the next question. Is there a Scarbosa concordance? In other words, Scarbosa A or B. If yes, you're done. Give lytics or activate your cath lab. If there's not Scarbosa concordance, then you can consider that third rule. But if that's negative also, you're just going to treat them like any other chest pain. Get your serial EKGs, serial troponins, rule them out just the way you do anyone else. And I think this has made life a lot easier when we see patients with left bundle come in with concerning symptoms to not have to try to figure out, is this new or old? You just look for instability, heart failure, or Scarbosa A or B. Very simple.
The vast majority of patients with left bundle branch block who present to the ED with chest pain do not have an MI. The patients we need to identify are the less than 10% of left bundle patients who do have an acute occlusion of a coronary artery, since these are the ones who clearly benefit from acute reperfusion therapy. The ECG may help to identify some of these patients with acute coronary occlusion. Concordant ST elevation or ST elevation in leads that shouldn't have ST elevation are the best predictors of acute occlusion. Now, the modified Scarbosa criteria, which includes this third criteria of more than 25% of the R or S wave discordant deviation, is more sensitive than the original Scarbosa criteria for predicting acute MI in the presence of a left bundle. But don't forget that this needs an external validation study before we begin to apply it widely in clinical practice. Before we go on to the next section, Dr. Mattu will present you a little comedic interlude.
Anybody here have dictation systems out there? So I love dictation, but somebody tried to talk me out of it by sending me a whole bunch of transcripts of actual dictated medical records. Very interesting. These are actual dictations, transcriptions on final medical records. Here's a quote. The patient has no previous history of suicides, right? It's a good thing. The patient left her white blood cells at another hospital. Patient has two teenage children, but no other abnormalities. All right. She has no rigors or shaking chills, but her husband says she was very hot in bed last night. The magic's not gone. All right. So some more bizarre medical records. Large brown stool ambulating in hall. That's kind of scary, actually, all right? Patient had waffles for breakfast and anorexia for lunch. The patient was in his usual state of good health until his airplane ran out of fuel and crashed. Can't argue with that. And a rectal exam revealed a normal-sized thyroid.
And with that image etched into your brain, on to case number two.
A 50-year-old man with chest pain who came in with a pretty good story. I'm not going to give you all the details. Just trust me, it was a good story for ACS. So you get a quick 12-lead EKG. They did not think that there was enough ST segment elevations. He just repeated the 12-lead about 15, 20 minutes later. There is ST segment elevation of at least a millimeter in at least leads 3 and lead AVF. So by repeating the 12-lead, life became a lot easier. And at this point, he consulted cardiology. They got the first troponin back. It was elevated. Patient got streptokinase. There was a little bit of a delay in giving the lytics. Patient did well. So I'm not presenting this case because anything bad happened, but because it gives us an opportunity to talk about ST segment elevation. Because 2013, I learned some new stuff about ST elevation that I didn't know before, or at least wasn't sure about before, based on what the guidelines.
So the first question Dr. Mattu is going to answer is, where do you measure the ST elevation from? Now, we used to just say the J point, but it's actually a little bit more complicated than that.
Where do you measure the ST elevation? I still hear people all over the map. You measure it at the J point. Do you measure it 40 milliseconds after the J point? I hear some people say 60 milliseconds after the J point. And if you're using the TP as your baseline, that's a millimeter. But if you're measuring at the J point, there's no ST segment elevation. All right, so let's go to some well-documented literature and some papers out there. This is from Journal of American College of Cardiology and Circulation, 2009. So every 5 years or so, the American College of Cardiology and the American Heart Association and a bunch of other societies all get together and they come up with new guidelines about how we're supposed to interpret the EKG. Right? New guidelines for how we should interpret STEMI, non-STEMI, left bundle, right bundle, everything, right? In 2009 was the last time they did this. Take a look at the lead author, Galen Wagner, who's the senior editor now on the Marriott textbook, very well-known electrocardiography expert. 2009, they said, we're supposed to measure at the J point and look for two contiguous leads, all right? There's also something very interesting that came out in this particular paper. They didn't say 1 millimeter of ST elevation in all of the leads. In fact, in this paper, by two major organizations, perhaps two of the largest cardiology organizations in the world, published in the two biggest cardiology journals in the world, what they said is that STEMI is defined not by 1 millimeter and 2 contiguous leads. It's a little bit more complicated than that. Here's what they said. Well, in men over the age of 40, it's 2 millimeters in V2, V3, and 1 millimeter in all the other leads. In men under the age of 40, it's 2.5 millimeters in V2 and V3. And in women, it's 1.5 millimeters in V2 and V3. So in other words, V2 and V3 have different criteria. Not only that, but it's different criteria in men and women. Not only that, but it's different criteria in men that are under 40 versus men that are over 40. Well, I'm not going to pay attention to this publication. Let's look at a better publication. Let's go to the 2013 National Guidelines on STEMI, all right? So here's what the ACC-AHA 2013 STEMI guidelines say that we should define STEMI as on EKG. Same thing. That's not what I learned. That's not what I've been practicing for many, many years, right? Well, you know, this is just American stuff, right? ACC, AHA, you know, there's American cardiologists, you know. Let's go to something maybe a little bit more universal, right? So this is the 2012 expert consensus document, European Society of Cardiology, American Cardiology Foundation, American Heart Association, the World Health Federation. There's stormtroopers that are involved in this thing, right? The third intergalactic definition of myocardial infarction. This is what the criteria are on Jupiter and the Crab Nebula everywhere, right? Same thing. So I think it's important to realize that the criteria actually are different than maybe what many of us have learned. Now, I'm not telling you to start ignoring 1 or 1.5 or 2 millimeters of ST segment elevation. I'm not telling you to do that. But I've been able actually to use these guidelines to help some physicians that have been sued for missing subtle STEMIs. And also, it's important to realize that as a normal variant, everybody has greater elevation in V2 and V3, especially young men. And so, you know, ST elevation is more complicated than we've ever thought. It's not just a matter of looking at the J point and looking for ST elevation. It's a bit more complicated than that. And perhaps what we should be doing is spending our time paying a lot of attention, looking at reciprocal changes, and also the morphologies of the ST segments. In particular, one morphology that I want to nail into your brain is if you ever see an ST segment which is straight. Straight is not good. Normal ST segments should be concave upwards. That's like a happy face, right? Happy face. When it's concave upwards, we're happy. When it starts getting tombstone, everybody knows that's bad. But what happens between concave upwards and tombstone is straightening. And if you ever see ST segments that are straight, do yourself and your patient a big favor. Just repeat the 12 lead, which is exactly what this physician did and made the diagnosis of STEMI.
So in other words, you could have less than 1 millimeter of J-point elevation and 2 contiguous leads, which would not fulfill the criteria for a STEMI according to the guidelines. But if you see that straightening of the ST segment, you know that that's probably a STEMI. And what you do then is repeat the ECGs frequently to look carefully for any ST segment evolution. And as Dr. Mattu will explain next, you need to look for those reciprocal changes.
Dr. Cardiologist, who invasive cardiologist, will say, if you go to the cath lab and you actually, I guess just for kicks, you tie off a coronary artery, right? What's the first thing that happens on the 12 lead? It's not ST elevation. Sometimes it's a reciprocal change that develops first. Sometimes the reciprocal changes precede the ST elevation. And even more importantly, before the STs start to rise, the first thing that happens to the ST segment is it goes from concave upwards to straight. And then it starts to rise and become tombstone. So again, please, if you ever see ST segments that are straight, repeat the 12 lead in a little bit and look for development of ST elevation. Here's the second EKG. There's already clearly ST elevation, so you're done. But again, take a look at how straight that is. It's an early finding. Sometimes people talk about hyperacute T waves. Everybody makes a big fuss about hyperacute T waves as being these tall T waves. Hyperacute doesn't mean tall. Hyperacute, in my mind, means the initial part of the T wave is straight. When you see the initial part of the T wave is straight, just repeat the 12 lead. And we say this all the time, you know, what's the big deal about repeating the 12 lead? It's a piece of paper and ink, for gosh sakes. It costs practically nothing. And if that repeat 12 lead tells you that somebody is a STEMI in process, you just save someone's life, as this physician did, right? So, simple take-home point once again. ST elevation is a bit more complicated. Pay attention to the morphologies of the ST segments. And whenever you have any doubts, just get cardiology involved. You don't have to be a hero about this. You don't have to be a cowboy about this. Get cardiology's eyes involved in this as well. And get serial EKGs, and you'll be amazed how often those serial EKGs lead to a life-saving diagnosis. So, summary thus far. New left bundle equals stem equivalent, gone. Left bundle is a stem equivalent. Who cares if it's new or old? Left bundle is a stem equivalent if they're hemodynamically unstable, if they have acute heart failure, or if they have those Scarbosa A or B. In terms of ST elevation, we measure at the J point, not 40 milliseconds after, which is what I learned in residency, some of you did as well, not 60 milliseconds after, which is what I still hear some people do, but right at the J point, and morphology is probably more important than the actual ST elevation. Last case. Simple case, simple take-home point from this case as well. We've got a 61-year-old woman who came to the emergency department. Again, all of these are real cases. This woman came in, and she's got substernal chest pain, shortness of breath, maybe diaphoresis. She's clearly coming in. There's no doubt. This isn't even atypical. This is a clear-cut, typical ACS case. The first EKG, however, is pretty much unremarkable. All right? Well, doesn't matter. We're bringing her in. We're going to give her the aspirin. You know, if you're a heparin fan, you can start the heparin. We're going to do everything. And she's coming in to at least telemetry. So pretty normal 12-lead EKG. But there's no beds upstairs, right? You guys have that problem every now and then. There's no beds upstairs, right? She's stuck with us in the ED. We give her some nitrates. She's getting a little bit better, but we can't get rid of the pain. She's got persistent pain. What do? Start a nitro drip? Give her morphine? Sure, we're going to do all of those things. But simple thing here. When somebody has persistent pain that you're worried about, repeat the 12 lead. All right, that's it. Just repeat the 12 lead. Get another one. All right, so we're going to repeat the 12 lead. Here's EKG number two. T waves are getting bigger, and it's becoming straight. You're also starting to develop a little bit of ST depression. Remember what we said just a few minutes ago. When somebody's having an MI, the first thing that develops is not the ST elevation. The first things that may develop are the reciprocal change and the straightening. And when you see that, get another EKG. So we got another one. 20, 30 minutes later, now the patient is starting to develop Wellens. And then a short time later, the ST start to rise a little bit. This patient goes right up to the cath lab and turned out to have a 100% LAD lesion. If the patient had simply gone upstairs with that first EKG, what would have happened? She would have sat there infarcting for who knows how long. Because how long does it take to get a repeat 12 lead up on the floors? It can take a long time, right? And during all that time, the patient's just continuing to infarct. But because she's in the ED right in front of us, we just repeat the 12-lead piece of paper and ink. It cost practically nothing, and it probably saved her life, right? And that leads me to this study. It's a very, very nice, simple study with a simple take-home point. Published in American Heart Journal in 2013. They looked at over 41,000 patients from a STEMI database, and what they found was that 11% of the patients who were diagnosed with the STEMI were not diagnosed with the STEMI on the first EKG. It was the subsequent EKGs that made the diagnosis of a STEMI. And almost always, the diagnostic STEMI EKG was obtained within the first hour and a half. In other words, if your patient has a STEMI, chances are they're going to manifest the ST elevation in the first hour to hour and a half while they're with you in the emergency department. Simple take-home point. If somebody's got concerning symptoms, just repeat the 12-lead. and you might discover a STEMI evolving right in front of you. Have a low threshold to get repeat 12 EKGs, especially when people have ongoing concerning pain or if there's changes. The pain's getting worse, the pain goes away, it comes back again. Just get a repeat 12 lead. I promise you, before next year's conference, every one of you who does this will be able to come back and say, I picked up a STEMI or I picked up an ACS case that I would have missed had I not done the 12 leads. All right. This is not a zebra thing. Everybody in this room will pick this up just by being liberal about the repeat 12 leads. And those are lives saved by a piece of paper and ink called an EKG. For those people that might be interested in more practice, every Monday on our university website, I post a little video case. It's open access, and these go all the way back to September 2011 if you want some extra practice. www.ekg.umem.org.
And if you want to review the stuff that Dr. Matthews just talked about with left bundle branch block and ST elevation, it's all on this fantastic free resource. We'd love to hear your comments, questions, or concerns about Dr. Matthews' lecture and Dr. Swadron's lecture on vertigo. You can either email me directly at anton@emergencymedicinecases.com, or you can go to the website and at the bottom of the blog post, submit your comments to start a discussion online. We're going to be bringing you more from the Emergency Medicine Update Conference in Toronto. And if you really enjoyed Dr. Matthews' lecture, he's going to be in the Emergency Medicine Update Europe Conference, which is in October, and this year it's going to be in France. If you like cycling, fine French fruit, and wine, this is the conference for you. You can go to the EMU website for further details. As well, we're going to have a fantastic episode on social media, foam, and medical education with Dr. Rob Rogers, who's also from Baltimore, who runs a great course called I Teach EM there. And he's done podcasts on the EM Rap Educators Edition, as well as a new podcast that's really amazing. We'll also have Dr. Ken Milne from Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine, as well as Dr. Brent Toma from Boring EM and Academic Life in Emergency Medicine. So until next time, take it easy.